This is the North Africa Journal, and thank you for downloading this podcast. For more podcasts, information, and user rules, please visit north-africa.com/podcast.
Good afternoon. This is Ariski Daoud from the North Africa Journal. Today is December the 19th, 2010, and with me is my good colleague Alessandro Bruno. Hello, Alessandro.
Hello, everyone, and hello, Ariski.
Thank you. So today is probably our first dual podcast. We're essentially we're going to try to do that on a regular basis, at least on a monthly basis, to go over some of the big topics affecting North Africa and why not anything else above and beyond that region. So I think what we want to do today is perhaps have a free-flowing conversation about for about 30 minutes on really looking back at 2010 events in North Africa, if you know, for whichever ones are worth talking about, and maybe if we manage to get some outlook and view of what's coming in 2011. That's a tough call, but we will try. So, Alessandro, maybe the first question to you is, as we close the year, you know, we're less than 15 days from you know, a couple of weeks from 2011. What was or what were the biggest events that you think are worth noting that have affected North Africa in 2010, if any? So I would love to hear your thoughts there, and anything you can think of.
Well, there are a number of events in North Africa, and in 2010, I can't think of a single one that was more important than another. In the sense, there was no Haiti earthquake, for example. Mm-hmm. However, there are very important things for the near future in North Africa, and there are pressures coming from below the Sahara and from above. So let's see, very important one. Let's start out with some individual countries then. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Libya. I'm going to talk about Libya because it is the one I most usually deal with. In Libya, we have a continuing problem with the ability of this country to attract investment other than in the oil sector. Now, there were a couple of important things happened in Libya in 2010. The Swiss dispute came to a close. So there were two Swiss businessmen being held in Tripoli after the arrest of Hannibal Gaddafi in Switzerland in 2007. And finally, the two men who were arrested in the retaliatory wave of anti-Swiss sentiment by the government, well, specifically by one family in the government. So that came to a close, and thanks to European Union pressure. It's actually quite interesting because it shows you how important certain Libyan products are to the European Union. They, rather than to side with Switzerland, they took a very apologetic approach. And when they were dealing with Libya, many European leaders went to Tripoli, and each one discussed this issue with very politely with Gaddafi. And finally, after a very strong intervention by France and I believe Germany, the Swiss citizens were released. So what does that tell us? Well, first of all, that Libya can still rely on oil and gas investment, and in fact, BP in 2011 was supposed to start drilling in 2010, but it's now 2011. We'll start the offshore platform development, and Libya is very important for this. I mean, after the North American debacle, Libya was actually pushing for BP to come. Unfortunately, however, apart from oil and gas, nothing else is really happening in Libya. Yes, there's a lot of infrastructure projects being touted, but the much heralded tourism boom never occurred. And what we're seeing actually is a real return of the, shall we call them, the conservative element, because technically they're the revolutionary, but the, mm-hmm. the conservatives are definitely back. After, it seems, for the last couple of years, Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi, who's the champion of the more progressive forces in Libya. In fact, he runs the closest thing to an independent press in Libya. Mm-hmm. Well, in 2010, there was a big crackdown on this, in fact, on the very, in December of 2010. The newspapers owned by Gaddafi's son were shut down. His foundation was forced to move to London, and his foundation also made an interesting announcement that they would stay away from very political items, focusing on poverty alleviation in Africa. So it seems like his wings have definitely been clipped, and this is very important because to the future of Libya, not immediate concern, but in the long term, everyone wants to know the succession in Libya is very problematic because there's no constitution, there are no plans, and Muammar Gaddafi took power by a coup. So how is he going to be succeeded? Well, right now, if we are to believe that the sons will follow, then Mutasim al-Gaddafi, who has a military background, is now head of the security, has much more of a chance, and it seems like the It really points to the fact that the security apparatus, the conservative apparatus, has the upper hand right now. So I think from the Libyan perspective, that is definitely of key importance. A few key elements, the shutdown of Saif al-Islam's newspapers and forced transfer of the foundation, is highly symbolic, a very important sign.
Right, right. So Alessandro, now staying on sort of the Libya theme, and we probably need to move to other region parts of the region as well, but staying on a Libyan theme, the Libyan impact or focus the past let's say 12 months has been essentially very European centric, shall I say, meaning that you've certainly raised the topic of Libya and Swiss relations, which have worsened and are and right now both are working to sort of bring back those relations to a normal level, but there's also obviously other countries in Europe that Libya has been focusing on, essentially.
Oh, sure.
Its relationships with Italy and Western Europe as a buffer for immigration. Yeah. and other cases similar to that. Is it fair to assume that Libya has had a less effective African policy, despite obviously the billions of dollars that it is investing here and there in sub-Saharan Africa, and more focused on Europe? Or is it just a volatile, non-planned, foreign policy that just happens to be based on events on a day-to-day basis?
Well, here's the here's my problem. Not the problem, but yes, there are many points, and I glossed over some, but I want to mention, getting back to your point, many countries are need relations with Libya in Europe for their energy goals, and that's really it. Unfortunately, I mean, for these countries, Libyan oil is rather irreplaceable. It's the cleanest oil in the world, so they all want it. It's very important. It's it's still a relatively stable country in the, and it's a very good position, an ideal geographic position, just below Italy, close, so in a safe, generally safe area. But the European Union, many countries in the European Union, are actually quite scared of relations with Libya. Mm. Libya holds, although it hasn't, it's not the really Libya we're talking about, the Gaddafi family, really, is problematic. No one wants to step on their toes. There is a WikiLeaks dispatch from suggesting that Libya put a lot of pressure on England to make sure that Ali Bassett al-Megrahi, the sole convict for the Lockerbie bombing, be released and not be allowed to die in a British jail. Now, were he allowed to die in a British jail, it would have been extremely embarrassing for the Gaddafi family, given the tribal nature of the relations that exist in Libya. And I suggest that readers look at some of the articles that we posted on Libya to understand what that entails. So because of this tribal nature and the honor that's attached, it's very important for many European countries still fail to understand how Libya works. And sometimes you step on toes that you don't know were even there. This is what Switzerland did when they arrested Hannibal al-Gaddafi for a perfectly arrestable crime, trashing a hotel room and allegedly hitting a maid. I mean, I think anyone in any situation like this in any hotel room in the West would face similar charges and could expect to spend a night in jail. The problem there was that a newspaper took pictures of Gaddafi's son, embarrassing him, embarrassing the leadership. So Gaddafi was, the father was pushed to do something about it. And the same with Ali Bassett al-Megrahi. England received many threats. The threats were not veiled. They said the English interests would be affected. The English businessmen would not have an easy time. So essentially, they will get the Swiss treatment or the Bulgarian treatment or any of the treatments we've heard about over the years where really mysterious things happen and people wonder why. There are always those risks in Libya. Now, the one place where Libya will not risk too much is if it's involved in the oil sector, because the oil sector is the engine and they don't, that is one of the few institutions that actually works very well. The rest is wrought with risks. You have to really walk on your tiptoes when you're dealing with Libya.
So the fact that Libya lost its bid to hold a second term presidency of the African Union, and it's shifting or its activity vis-a-vis Europe, maybe purely coincidental. It just happens to be the case because there's much more interaction with Europe, and therefore what we saw with Scotland and the United Kingdom in general, with Switzerland, with Libya's stance on immigration or role there, essentially it was sort of coincidental that we've been hearing more about Libya versus Europe as opposed to Libya versus Africa.
Well, Libya versus Africa is also very important, and funny enough, many African leaders are also very concerned by Gaddafi. During his tenure as president of the African Union, he irritated many African leaders, and one in particular, Yoweri Museveni, president of Uganda, with this talk of King of Kings and uniting African countries that really don't want to be united. After all, if we look at the trend in Africa right now, unity is not the first word that comes to mind. We've got a separation referendum in Sudan in 2011. We've got Ivory Coast now in the throes of a new civil war between North and South. And those are just the first two that come to mind, because there are other separatist struggles. We've got, so really unity is not, I mean, that is Muammar Gaddafi's pet project. And how many Libyans actually share this pet project is extremely questionable. The one practical side is that perhaps Libya says it wants to make Tripoli a hub for African, European transport. Well, that's great. You know, they have all kinds of land and room for infrastructure and the money to pay for it. There's only one little problem, that getting a Libyan visa is still an adventure for many people, particularly for tourists. So where exactly are all these travelers going to be coming from that hasn't been addressed? It's the same old game of, unfortunately, in Libya, the system is arranged where one person has an idea and it's approved, and another person has an idea that immediately contradicts it. unfortunately, this idiosyncratic system, really, for Libya to develop its potential, this has to be... And here's where Saif al-Islam came in. Saif al-Islam made very similar observations to the ones I'm making right now. Mm-hmm. He added that Libya needed a constitution and a proper succession. Mm-hmm. For this, he's paid a high price. He's really had to leave the country. This, we're talking about the leader's son. So
that's right. And adding to your comment on the on sort of the shipping hub for the region. Libya is also facing a couple of big hurdles, not small at all. I mean, massive ones. One is essentially every Maghreb nation is building its own massive port infrastructure, whether it's Tangiers or Algeria or Tunisia
or Egypt.
Or Egypt, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So there's also the traditional Southern European ports, which really are incredibly important and have been sort of the lead there. And so competing with them would be incredibly difficult. And really, perhaps equally important is the fact that Libya's traditional, quote-unquote traditional trading partners, mainly Western Europe and others, are really economically suffering right now. So it's really poor timing, perhaps, and again, it speaks to your point that policymaking is really very subjective. It's something that takes into account a leader's view or decision on how to move the country forward with these grandiose projects.
Well, that's the other issue, the grandiosity aspect. Gaddafi looks to the grandiosity aspect. I really think this is someone who, in another life, would have been an actor, not a political leader. He wants drama around him, and he's not thinking. I mean, the great ideas are not backed by all the afterthought or the prethought required to achieve them. I mean, like I think the airport story is indicative of this. Really, it's a small story, but it's very indicative of what's really going on. And I think Libya will continue to attract a lot of interest in big projects, but how many of these big projects will actually be done, and how many of them will be white elephants is another story, and how many of them are really necessary for the population.
I think a very interesting measurement of success in my mind, it is a very simplistic one, and one that says, when are foreigners willing to actually live in your country? The best example of that would be some of the Gulf Emirates, Dubai and Qatar and all these countries where it actually you actually feel secure being in a place like this. Not only as an expatriate you actually earn a good living, but you know that there is a rule of law to a certain degree. You know that
you have a life.
And so in many of North African countries, most of them, I would say, for those who hear that are from the region and are decision makers, it's essentially, ask yourself this question. Are our countries places that expatriates would be willing to live and enjoy life? And that, I think Libya is really not in that category at the moment. Now,
it's definitely not, but there are definitely those that, for example, I would say Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt have made it quite desirable for foreigners to to live, not just to work. Oh, they you can actually look forward to living in any of the major capitals that have the capitals of the countries I've just cited.
Oh, no, not only capitals. I mean, we know of a lot of Americans and Brits who live in various cities in Morocco that are really not necessarily capitals. I mean, Tangier.
Oh no, Morocco,
Marrakech in particular.
Morocco is another mini Spain, attracting retirees.
That's right. And in terms of the succession in Libya, staying again the course on the Libyan discussion for a moment, what are your thoughts? I mean, is Saif al-Islam still pretty much the front runner, or you think is really no guarantee that it'll happen?
No, I don't think so at all. Of course, there's no guarantee of anything in Libya. I mean, right now, he's not the front runner. But who knows what the father is thinking? I mean, he's allowing the security apparatus to even go as far as to almost arrest the son in favor of another son who happens to be closer. I mean, what he's really doing is generating a family fight for the succession. Is this some kind of Darwinism? He wants to see who the strongest one of the two is. Well, for many reasons, I would urge, I would hope that Saif al-Islam has the upper hand, because at least as far as his ideas are concerned, his recipes are what Libya needs. Mutasim hasn't offered anything new whatsoever. All he is a representative of the security apparatus. Now, mm-hmm. A country cannot live on security apparatus alone.
That's right. I think that sort of what we're hearing is essentially that Mutasim has the strong backing of Egypt. Essentially, he is one. He's a man that spends apparently a great deal of time in Cairo with the Egyptian leadership and regime. In contrast, I think that Saif al-Islam has the eyes and ears of the West, obviously, but more interestingly, regionally anyway. He seems to be much more lining up himself with his Western neighbors, Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco, where the Maghreb tends to be behind him. So it will be interesting to watch what will happen. So go ahead.
No, sorry. Saif al-Islam really also captures, I think, crucially, the imagination of Libyan-educated youth. That's really his strength. That's really what we should be focusing on, because Libya has a huge young population, and many of them are completely disenchanted with the so-called Jamahiriya system. So Saif al-Islam represents really their hopes. Mutasim does not. Mutasim is the old guard. Ironically, these guys are call themselves revolutionary, but there's nothing revolutionary. They're the conservatives. And those are the ones that this is really the story in Libya and perhaps in North Africa, I suppose.
In general.
For 2010, really the reaffirmation of unpredictable Libya, at least as far as certain policies are concerned.
Looking forward, 2011, you think that, as I do, it's going to be same. Type of environment. Muammar Gaddafi is still a relatively young man. He's not old, so he's going to be around for a while. His policies will remain fairly volatile, but I think it's fair to say that it will continue to have a Eurocentric proportion, whereby he holds the many of the cards in that relationship, essentially energy-based, immigration and security-based, and therefore he will continue to play the Euro-Libyan relationship card there much more. His relationship with Berlusconi, fairly good, you think?
His relationship with Berlusconi, like-minded individuals, is very good, I would say. But Berlusconi is close to certain Italian business establishments, one of them being Eni. So Berlusconi does...
The oil and gas
consortium in Italy. And Berlusconi is also trying to promote Italian industry Fin Meccanica, again, people close to him.
Mm.
I think Berlusconi also finds Gaddafi's flamboyance a good cover or excuse for his own.
Mm.
So when, should Italy finally get rid of Berlusconi, and they came very close
mm-hmm.
weeks ago, then this is very interesting, because then this relationship with Libya would change. There are many aspects that the opposition, and including people who formerly were in the government, would like to change with Libya. They are concerned about the closeness of Berlusconi and Gaddafi, and they want to resize this relationship to something more along the lines of other Western European leaders, countries. Unfortunately, when you're dealing with a personality the likes of Gaddafi, to really make inroads in relations, you need someone who can share some of the limelight with him, because or shall we call him protagonism?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Blair got caught up in that. You have to become his friend in a way. He wants to see you as his friend. I think it's very important for him to feel respected and honored. You remember he canceled suddenly after attending the 2009 General Assembly in New York. He was supposed to visit Canada, or he intended to, and instead of landing, he turned the plane around. Most likely because that very day in Parliament, the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister made derogatory remarks about, brought up Lockerbie. So, he decided to change his mind and went directly to the Group 77 meeting in Venezuela.
Mm. Interesting.
So, you have to deal with him as a delicate, the senior relative. You have to pay respects. And this is the same type of thing diminished his effectiveness in Africa, where there are many dictators who don't want to be seen to appear lower in front of the population. Museveni being perhaps the most vociferous one against him. Although Libya is investing a lot in aspects of infrastructure in parts of Africa. Uganda, actually, being one of them. He donated a mosque. And he's still trying to play a mediatory role, although sometimes very erratically. For example, at the EU-Africa summit a few weeks ago, he, in order not to irk his European allies, he asked the president of Sudan, Bashir, to stay in Sudan, not to come. Because otherwise European leaders would have left the room, since al-Bashir is facing an international arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. So that sort of irked Sudan a little bit. There are odd relations with Mauritania, and he maintains a friendship with Mugabe. Or at least he likes to present himself as having a friendship with Mugabe.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still harboring these Pan-African ambitions, although much less vociferous than before.
Yeah.
And now his son, the Gaddafi Foundation, led by Saif al-Islam, is purportedly going to be focusing on poverty alleviation political attachment.
Well, I tell you, Africa doesn't have a shortage of interesting personalities and characters at the leadership level. I have to say that I would love to read a book or one day about Gaddafi, and probably I would love to read a book that sort of talks about Gaddafi and Berlusconi as an interesting couple to observe. So it would be really interesting.
Well, perhaps I could write that book.
I look forward to that, and I'll be the first one to buy that book.
This was a North Africa Journal podcast. Thank you for listening.